Hello and welcome to another edition of Extra Time Podcast. Today is part four of our Rugby World Cup special. My name's Steve Luckins, I'm the Senior Sports Editor here at The National. I'm delighted to be joined on the phone today from London, rushing to the airport, is the former Scotland international scrum half, Rory Lawson. Rory, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. I'm currently in glorious sunshine in London, on my way to Murrayfield Stadium for a dinner there this evening, and a build-up towards the Scotland-South Africa game on Saturday.
You must be very much looking forward to that game.
Yeah, I am. I'm not 100% sure exactly what my thoughts are on it at the moment. It's obviously we've done well in our opening two games, but we've got through them with the maximum points, which have been terrific. And obviously, it's a very different story now coming into play the favourites in the group. Still a bit of a wounded animal,
sure,
in the form of the box.
But I mean, as Japan have shown already, they are beatable.
Yeah, they definitely are. I think they're probably easier to beat first time round when you catch them a bit cold than they are afterwards when you get the reaction. They know that they've got to win every game left in this group to stand a chance of going through in the World Cup. So they'll certainly be determined to react and have a big game themselves. So Scotland will be aware of that. But looking at the box over the last, you know, 6 months or so, I don't think they have been the beast that they once were until probably their win against Samoa last weekend, whereby they really showed their power and class against the Samoan side, who were probably a little bit fatigued off the back of a short turnaround and were just out-muscled and made too many mistakes to stay competitive in that game.
Sure. And tell us about the mood in Scotland, Rory. I mean, after an indifferent Six Nations, expectations were probably pretty low. Have you been surprised by how good they've looked so far against Japan and USA?
I've not, actually. I've been, they've played like I thought they would. I think you've got to take things and the whole scenario and the equation here that Bernd Cotter's only been in charge for, well, it's now sort of 15, 16 months, but by the time he got a hold of the squad in June for the pre-season, that was the first time that he's had the group together for a long time. And I felt, though we finished bottom of the pile in the Six Nations, that there was a lot of good stuff to be taken from that. And they certainly used his time with the squad well in pre-season. And I believe the performances have shown that. To date, they've shown a lot of composure in their wins, the first half against the USA highlighting that with a poor 40 minutes. But the second half, they went back to their processes, understood what it was going to take to win the game, and did so handsomely in the end. So I think there is a depth in the squad now. Worryingly, though, the one area that we probably lack a bit of depth is in that fly half roll. And seeing Finn Russell roll his ankle against the USA was worrying. From what I gather from within the camp, he's on his way back to fitness, though I'm not 100% sure he'll be good to go against South Africa.
Okay, and one thing I noticed, Rory, I don't know if you agree with this, I'd say Japan are probably more one of the quickest teams I've seen, but certainly noticed an up-tempo game about Scotland's game. It's fast, it's expansive, perhaps, you know, not what we've been used to seeing from Scotland. Like you said, you finished bottom of the pile in the Six Nations. Do you think that's the way they've got to go at South Africa?
Yeah, I think so. I think in many ways, Scotland's biggest downfall was the fact that they struggled to piece together more than sort of 40 or 50 minutes of that high-quality rugby in the Six Nations. And you're not going to win many games if you do that. And what they've shown since is that against the likes of Japan, they certainly put in a very, very strong 80-minute performance. Against the USA, they put in a strong 40 minutes. But they'll be very aware that against South Africa, you have to be at your best for the whole game. You've got to ride the tough times when South Africa build pressure and take the opportunities when they come. And I think, as you touched on, that they've got to play with a high tempo against what will be a big, physical South African side who will look to try and bully Scotland. But I do feel that the Scottish squad isn't one that is necessarily easy to bully against now, and I think I'll look forward to hopefully seeing them hold their own.
You mentioned Scotland's injury concern there at fly half. Just how much of a loss will Jean de Villiers be to the Springboks? Do you think it's an area that Scotland can exploit?
Yeah, well, I think he's a loss certainly when it comes to leadership. He's one of his second, I think, most appearances as captain for South Africa. He's a huge loss, and he'd be a loss to any team. I do, on the flip side, feel that having watched a bit of the rugby championship, one of the most exciting combos in that was De Allende and Jesse Creel in the midfield for sure. The box. And I think Heineken Mayer will probably go for that combination. It's a combination that's got youth, pace, power, but one that Scotland will have to try and expose when it comes to the experience. Try and ask different questions of them, move them around, and put them under a lot of pressure.
Now, we just touched on the captaincy issue there. Obviously, you've captained your country. You know what it's all about. Most teams tend to pick the big, ugly brutes, the second rowers, hopefully you'll forgive me if I ever bump into him, like the Paul Connells, the Sam Warburtons, the big physical guys trying to intimidate the opposition. Scotland seem to have gone down a different route with yourself and Greg Laidlaw. Why do you think that is?
It's all about the brains. It's the conductor, the piano player behind the piano pushers. I think the reality is that with Scotland, I think Vern Cotter's made it very clear he likes the scrum half to be his captain, mainly because he's closest to the action. He's one of the key decision makers. He gets probably most access to the ball, so therefore can dictate the game plan from that position. And he's also in a position to rally the troops in front of him while controlling when the backs get the ball. So obviously Greg settled into that role well. I'm a huge believer that the captain is the guy that sits in front of the journalists and does the media stuff and rallies the troops in the final moments before going out to the game. But ultimately, it's about the spine of the leadership group, and you need a strong leadership group in order to be a good side. And you look at the likes of Ireland, who have O'Connell there, but they also have Conor Murray in there, and they have Johnny Sexton, they have Rob Carnet at fullback, they've had Brian O'Driscoll for the last 15 years at 13, they've got Jamie Heaslip at number 8, Rory Best at hooker. You need that spine to be strong in a leadership group, because it's the power of the collective. And similarly, the All Blacks, it's exactly the same. McCaw is the man who sits in the press conferences and talks about how the side's feeling and the preparation for the game. But ultimately, you look at the experience around them, and you've got to have a strong group, because rugby is a team game after all. It's the ultimate team game, and you've got to have everyone pulling in the same direction.
Sure. And now, obviously, there's another huge match to come on Saturday. The hosts, England, take on Australia in Pool A. That's a must-win game, obviously, for England. Now, most Scots, well, probably most fans in general, are of the camp anyone but England. Can you see them getting past the Wallabies, or is this lights out for England?
I think England will have to be looking at their power game to beat the Aussies. I think Australia now have a pack who can compete a lot better at set piece, and that's obviously going to be where a lot of the game is played. I felt obviously the England as the host nation are under the microscope in a massive way, and the reaction off the back of their loss at the weekend to Wales has been significant here, and I'm sure the world over in the media. So they'll be looking to bounce back in a big way, and I'm sure much like the South Africans after their loss to Japan, will be coming out with a real attitude to them to right some wrongs. And Australia are a quality side. It's going to be a very, very close game. I've no doubt about that. And it'll be one on fine margins. I think England will probably sneak through. I think Australia will probably beat Wales, and then I think it'll probably come down to those bonus points and points difference in the end. But from my point of view, I'd like England to to stay in the tournament, certainly.
Well said, Rory. Okay, Rory.
Well, I know, for the tournament, it's really important that the hosts stay in, because it's gripping the nation as it is, and I think we need to keep that that buzz going.
Excellent. Okay, Rory. Well, it's been great to talk to you, mate. I do hope you enjoy the rest of the World Cup, and hopefully we'll have you back on the Extra Time podcast Sunday soon.
Great stuff. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Rory. But luckily for all you listeners out there, that is not my only guest today. I'm also joined, as ever, by our senior national reporter, Paul Radley. Paul, welcome. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thanks, Stuart.
Excellent, excellent. Well, me and you are both English, so I guess it would be a little bit silly not to focus on that. And a lot of negativity around the camp. Obviously, it was a disappointing result. The manner of the defeat, the 28-25 defeat to Wales last weekend. What do you think of head coach Stuart Lancaster pretty much hanging his captain Chris Robshaw out to dry in his post-match comments?
Yeah, I think Robshaw brought a little bit of that on himself by actually saying, blame me, this was my decision. But Lancaster did seem to let him go with that theory. But Lancaster did seem to be fuming in his very first television interview after the loss. He did seem, when the question was put to him, was that the right decision to kick to the corner and go for a line out and go for the drive for the try to win the game rather than take a kickable penalty.
It's such fine margins, isn't it? Because the form Farrell was on, it was 2 metres in from the line, but in that game him and Bigger weren't going to miss kicks. You could have put them anywhere on the pitch, weren't they? But if Robshaw takes that line out cleanly, they go over the line, he's a hero, and unfortunately it didn't come off for him. But there just seems to be this sense of impending doom around the camp at the moment, doesn't there? Although they've been bolstered today, I gather Joseph is winning his fitness race.
Yeah, apparently so. Apparently he's been shuffled back into the lineup, even though he was supposedly out for all the remaining pool matches with his chest injury. Move him to 13, where he obviously would have been one of the first names on the team sheet had he been had a perfect bill of health. Anyway, Barrett back inside to 12, and Burgess slips out of the lineup and goes back onto the bench, which didn't work too badly in the first game.
No, and I think although I don't think Sam Burgess had a terribly bad game, I think what it did do was take Barrett out of his natural defensive cauldron. And there was no mistaking that when Burgess went off, they attacked Barrett down the 13 channel with some success.
Yeah, I think I was reading some fascinating insight by Gordon Darcy, the old Irish centre, in the Irish Times this morning. And he was saying that Burgess... he's not a great point of reference because he doesn't know exactly and instinctively where he needs to be. He's not a great point of reference for the guys round him. So while it didn't look like he played particularly badly himself, some of the confusion, when the confusion did happen for England, which admittedly they were ahead for most of the game, might have stemmed from his positioning. That's insight from a guy who's played a lot at Test match rugby at centre for Ireland. So that was an interesting theory on the matter.
And Paul, quick predictions, South Africa v Scotland?
Oh,
who wins?
South Africa look very good against Samoa, so I think they might be on a roll now.
And England-Wales, are England heading out of their own tournament?
Oh, you'd have to hope not, even as non-English. Surely non-English people would want the host nation to stay in, wouldn't they?
Let's hope so. Well, Paul, that's all we've got time for today. It's been great speaking to you.
Cheers, Steve.
This podcast has been produced by Marwan Al-Hamadi on the Multimedia Desk. You can follow us on Twitter at NatSportUAE and keep up to date on the website at thenational.ae/sport.